As much audio out to you fine folks as possible. And of course, I had the 16-carat preview yesterday, and now today, a very special show, because I am joined on this free show by hero to all podcast listeners and star of the 1991 WWF retrospective with Joe Gagne, Mr. Justin Shapiro. Justin, how are you, sir?
Overexposed.
Yes, you are, but we still love you. And also by the man who, according to Justin and his podcast, bore the brunt of many Ricky Steamboat or Ricky the Dragon Steamboat arm drags and chops, King Haku, or just King Amo of the board. Amo, how are you doing?
I'm very good, and I'm very much the king of the board.
Yes, you are. And we're trying to hold it together quite professionally now, and you'll all understand life when you listen to the end of the show, believe me. But yes, we are forging on here with a straight face to talk about a very grandiose topic. A topic which we feel this website, as much as we adore it, and we adore the life it allows us to live, we feel this topic has not been it's not been talked about and given enough credit on this website. No, I'm not talking about Japan. I am talking about NXT. A subject very close to my heart. Sort of close to Amo's heart. And then so close to Justin Shapiro's heart that I think someday I will be at the wedding of Justin Shapiro and the NXT concept. So Justin, tell us about what you love about NXT and what NXT is all about.
I guess about a year ago, I would say I fell in love with a southern girl, gave her wings, and she don't want to fly no more. And her name was NXT, the gender-neutral, now internet-only webisode on WWE.com. And it's really more my love affair with NXT, I guess, did not begin until, I guess, the final episode of season two. Because I think the majority of people, and based on their hits or page views or stream views or whatever modern media content is measured in on the internet, being low, what most people know NXT from would be the season from last February when the show started with the guys who became the Nexus. And that NXT, or whatever you remember it, I guess structurally it's still the same, but it has come a great distance since then.
Yes, it has. It's evolved into something which, as we'll explore greatly in our... This will be our breakdown of Season 4 of NXT, is the season that we have all watched every episode of, and it's probably the closest to our hearts. And that's the one we'll be looking at specifically. And as we talk about that, we'll talk about how NXT has evolved, not devolved, because this has been for the better, into something that quite like metal back in the day. The higher ups, the brass, didn't really care about, and that allowed the participants to pretty much do what they want, and it's been a wild ride. And Justin, I know before we sort of delve into season four, you want to talk about the groundwork that was laid as far as seasons 1, 2, and 3, and what they offered, what they were all about.
Yeah, there's a definite trajectory to the show, and I guess just for clarity's sake, you know, NXT started, I think, last February, maybe right the week before or the week after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. And it replaced ECW because ECW's ratings were bad. And I guess in an instant, in Sweeps Month, Vince or someone who he was real happy to hear from came up with this idea for the NXT format, and they went immediately into it, I think, less than a month after they had the press release to announce the concept. And
Justin, maybe move that mic a little bit closer there.
See, I put it down because I don't want you to echo, but I think the echo is not my fault.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I don't hear an echo.
Okay. Now, this is the very important history of ECW, it's of NXT. It's basically like the first Hanukkah. Because they didn't think that the episode order
Hanukkah, what's that?
On TV. Never mind. You wouldn't. I don't want to bring up cultural divides with you because you have a worldview that it just straight ahead and Alan.
It is, but, in fact, Alan.
Anyway, so they had this thing, the revolutionary concept and all that stuff you hear every time WWE really does anything. It's going to change TV, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, when they first, before NXT aired, were you expecting like a tough enough Ultimate Fighter kind of
hype? Yeah, I remember when they announced Danielson as one of the people, I was like picturing Danielson like kind of hanging around a house, in a house type scenario, and I was like, that's going to be wacky. And so yeah, I thought it would be something where they were at training center training and stuff like that, and I wasn't 100% sure it was going to be something that would be in front of the live audience.
Yeah, with no training, there were pros involved and they didn't do any coaching, it seems. I mean, I guess like Jericho helped Wade Barrett and some guys probably gave some good advice.
Christian showed Heath Slater how to do the lat pull.
Oh yeah. What we thought would be like a scripted version of The Ultimate Fighter, which is a very successful show, ended up being kind of like a male diva search in between green guys having matches. And I don't want to spend too much time on NXT 1 because it just was not good. And but what's funny to me is the Nexus angle that everybody obviously knows came because all the rookies on season 1 banded together against the WWE because they were upset about being mistreated and humiliated on TV.
And once they did that, they all of a sudden became good wrestlers. They on NXT, they were shit wrestlers and they couldn't win matches. They often lost in a few minutes and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden they were awesome guys that would beat everyone up.
They were a marauding army of terror.
Yeah.
Glorious summer.
They became good at the wrestling.
Yep. But what I think is funny is it was their big assault against WWE as a statement for how they were treated, and this was the most serious blow that had been struck on the WWE universe since the Alliance, I suppose, or the NWO came and did
that. Joseph.
And so they took the lesson to heart by not changing anything about the format for season 2 and doing the same double dare races and making guys give interviews about what the word tulip means to them and things like that. So season 2, started making its own impact by a few things cropped up earlier in the season. Titus O'Neil memorably gave an interview where he coined the phrase "make it a win," and that kind of got some.
When you want a win, make it a win.
Yeah, and there was some before that, but oh yeah, the Eli Cottonwood mustache interview went viral, I think, very briefly, and was on The Soup with Joel McHale, which is an American show where he talks about clips from TV, and it's popular. So,
and that was in Jericho's book, be like how Wood thing was mentioned.
I agree with that truth fact.
I'm just joking and making you look like a fool. Just there was no such comment in Jericho's book.
Oh.
Anyway, so what I've been trying to lead up to is the
really was, by the way. Anyway, go on.
The threshold was crossed in the finale of season 2 because Michael McGillicuddy, last seen being kicked in the face and sent away, gave this amazing rambling interview about the genesis of McGillicuddy. And
it was amazing.
Yeah, I would just watch it and be invigorated and informed by that. And then that was followed by a season-ending brawl where the rookies were, I think, told on the spot just to hit the ring and beat up Caval, and they didn't really know what to do. So then the WWE, the pros had to run down into the ring and whisper a bunch of instructions to them, and it was a big mess. And fittingly, everybody from season 2 is now gone. Caval, the winner, was fired, or I guess asked for his release a few months after winning, and then the three real prospects were all sent to FCW within a couple weeks of each other. But it was that night. It was much like the night that Kimono Wanalea danced atop the ECW arena. It changed everything, and it sent it's laid the groundwork for season 3, which was. I don't know, Alan, can you distill season 3 into just a few brief statements of what it encapsulated?
Season 3 encapsulated girl power. It encapsulated Primo Cologne as the friend of women everywhere. It encapsulated that I hate Jay Lethal's ex. That girl, AJ, is the most annoying person in the world. But then you kind of forgive her because she can be quite hot at times. But she's so irritating. And you just want to punch her in the face. Or at least see a girl punch her in the face, because that wouldn't be as horrible as if you, a man, punched her in the face. Yeah, it was an all-girl season. The interesting note was that there was supposed to be a giantess on the show. And, before the first episode, she got fired because she, I don't know, she said something stupid or something, or yeah, whatever. And she was replaced by a dashing young lady named Caitlin. And Caitlin, for some reason, her real name came into my head, and I forgot her NXT name. But anyway, Caitlin. Was the replacement, and Caitlin was an interesting character, and she was paired up with Vicky Guerrero, and there was just something about Caitlin. She had this odd kind of humor that you just rarely kind of saw on WWE TV, and it, at times it seemed like it was the greatest thing ever, and other times it was just weird. And yeah, the other thing that it was kind of known for is the worst matches, including Wrestling Missouri, worst match of the year, 2010, between the aforementioned Caitlin and I believe it was it Maxine?
It was.
Yeah. It was Maxine, who was the heel, the bitch, so to speak. And which is never a good character to play when you rely on fan voting. most people don't tend to like bitches. And so anyway, they had this match that was just horrendly bad, just so terrible. And there was other matches that almost came close to that level as well. And then, oddly enough, on the last episode, there was actually a really awesome match, which kind of brought things, I'm going to say full circle, but that would imply it started with an awesome match, which I don't recall.
Well,
I don't
it
recall
started it. With Daniel Bryan versus Chris Jericho. So.
Oh, I suppose yes, to that degree, it did come full circle.
Big change, I think, from NXT 3, from what it had been before, is show moved to the internet.
And it got CM Punk on commentary.
Right. Once it moved to the internet, it became a joke, not just to people who follow the wrestling business online, but WWE started treating it like a joke. Everyone who was on the show kind of knew it was a joke. And if you stop watching the show, you missed, I guess, just one long weekly in-joke of people who didn't want to be there. Michael Cole and Josh Matthews did commentary where they just openly mocked the show. And I guess the whole Cole character, who is now main eventing WrestleMania, actually began on NXT because it was that first week of the show last February where he started talking about Daniel Bryan and the internet and geeks, and look how far he's come from there.
Yeah, absolutely. It was part of the genesis of Cole. So, I mentioned Punk was on commentary. He was pretty great when in the few weeks he was there. Got in many a insider reference, which the likes of me obviously appreciated greatly. Talk about the steel domain and various things like that. Certainly, I enjoyed. He just mocked the girls in pretty hilarious fashion. It was an all around fun time. It was just kind of a big sort of mess of a season, like from the bits I've seen. I say it's all about half, but maybe a little more. And just it was just such a mess, but it was a lovable mess in a way. And it's definitely one that if you just wanted to go back and kind of watch YouTube highlights of, I think you'd very much get a kick out of.
Yeah, I don't want to. We've silenced Amo for far too long, so we need to bring him back. But yeah, it was just this upside down world and a surreal nightmare on a weekly basis of people who hated it. Michael Cole had a gong for a week where he would bang it and say the show is terrible. It was unique. And I know you like, you really like Superstars too. And I think the funny thing is that Superstars and NXT are both thought of as like these bottom of the barrel things, but if you get
nobody stab.
If you're one of those I want wrestling hashtag people who lament corporate wrestling and how scripted things are, then WWE Superstars is a 1 hour pure wrestling show that if it had a top 10 countdown, it could basically be the WCW Power Hour. And NXT.
The only thing about Superstars is now they've started throwing in like a full segment from Raw, like the key Rock or Cena segment or whatever. They'll put in the whole thing. Even this past week, it was the main event was a replay of something from Raw, which was kind of. I remember when it ended and I was like, wait, no, there's no other match? What the fuck? But aside from that, yeah, it is. The wrestling they have is awesome. I have decreed that there is a Superstars belt. And the current Superstars belt holder is one Chris Masters. He beat Tyler Rex for the belt and then went on to retain his Superstars belt against Tyler Rex in a rematch. But Tyler Rex has since attacked Chris Masters and he may be looking for another shot at the Superstars belt.
That's a pure sports build, right? It was when the titles meant something and wins and losses all. It really is. Things just kind of slow down in Superstars world. And on NXT, it's what you want is terms of people getting to be themselves, right? And unscripted promos and announcers without Vince in the headset. And I think the biggest appeal of NXT for me, and I guess we can finally transition into 4, is just that everyone is very relaxed on it. And they're just free from the shackles of the way WWE produces TV.
Yes, they are. Now, Emma, we're going to bring you back in. Because
why?
Because we like your dulcet and Northsider tones.
Yeah, I'm the hard man of the group, am I? Things go wrong.
You've been getting fights with horses, apparently.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, let's talk about season 4. And let's talk about the six rookies we had on season 4. We'll discuss them and and their careers on NXT first, and then we'll move on to other topics related to the season. So let's get the ball rolling with a we'll go on the heavy hitters right from the start. We'll go with the man Justin Shapiro is a big fan of, that being Derek Bateman. His pro was Daniel Bryan, and he had a very, very special relationship with Daniel Bryan. They were great buddies. They were just good pals, and they worked well together, and they had a similar sense of humor. And Derek Bateman is an over the top, wacky, comedic, in your face, lovable guy. And he really did a great job on this season. And in the ring, he actually got quite a bit better, to the point where he was having very, very good matches, one with Danielson and one with Johnny Curtis, towards the end of the season. And Amo, you can get the ball rolling. Derek, when you hear the words Derek Bateman, what comes to mind?
Bateman, well, I don't know. First thing comes to mind is Jason Bateman, the actor, and who me and Justin both love, and Alan has no idea who he is.
Yep.
It's the man who uttered the immortal words, she's cute, she's cutie, she's a little cutie pie.
There you go. So from him to Bateman. Yeah, Bateman's great. I mean, everything you said is true. He almost fits perfectly with the ideal of sort of the unscripted, fun nature of the show. He sort of sums it up. Although the unscripted nature of the show is that oftentimes he'd do promos to sort of get over as a babyface, and then we just get booed out of the building. At one point, he turned to Matt Stryker and he just shouted, "They hate me!" And it was very funny. But yeah,
sometimes he had a rough go with the crowds, but there are some big things that sort of tentpoles, if you will, that Bateman's season revolved around. The first of which was the double date that he went on with Daniel Bryan and the Bella Twins and their yellow and white dresses, which I still remember. And,
that's obsessive.
Not really. That was a monumental thing. And to lead into that, there was a segment with Bateman and Danielson backstage, where Bateman informed everyone that he would be a success on this double date with Daniel Bryan, because back in high school he was known as Dr. Love, and Daniel Bryan questioned the validity of this claim, of course. But Bateman, I guess he went on to prove in the double date that he was worthy of such a nickname.
I think it goes without saying. I think if he was a doctor, he had the prescription for passion. Let's cut that one out. But,
It's alliterative. It's alliterative, and therefore
there you go.
It counts. I've just been stunned because I don't know how to put into not just words but even physical gestures how much that double date segment meant to me. It's what got the ball rolling on this show, in fact, is when that happened, I emailed you, Alan, and that's when you said, we need to talk about this. We need to make Amo watch it. And Bateman is just, his sense of humor it's not pro wrestling humor. It's irreverent, I guess, is the word I'd use. And the sad thing to me is that the Derek Bateman we saw in NXT, who was kind of ironic and sometimes absurd, will never translate to like Brian Giewert's style comedy. If you saw Derek Bateman in that Mark Henry cologne skit on Raw, it was a sad, sad harbinger of things to come, I think. But Bateman in this double date, I would call the double date one of my two or three favorite things that has happened in WWE in years and years. If we had a fourth person on our show, I wish we could act it out right now.
I want to play Nikki Bella.
You've got the yellow dress.
Do you actually know she was the one in the yellow?
I have literally no idea.
I bet you Justin knows.
I have watched it a bunch. Nikki is the mean one. That is also a development from season three, is the Bella's... Nikki Bella turned heel on season three just because it seemed like she wanted to. And
well, if you remember, if you cast your mind back to it, the Bellas are good on getting themselves into storylines pre-WrestleMania. It's quite the talent that would serve people well in WWE, because they were a focus of the Unified Tag Team Championship storyline between the Colognes and Miz and John Morrison, I guess 2 years ago probably now. And I remember in the lead up to that, I think Nikki was the one that went with the heels and Brie went with the faces, and then they ended up both going with the, I can't remember, but I remember Nikki was the one who was initially the mean, bold one.
That makes sense. Bellas were super underrated, and I guess they've gotten on TV more after they did the Daniel Bryan, the actual feud with him, if you want to call it that. But they were, Nikki, midway through season three, just started being very mean and started wrestling like a heel and started insulting the girls on the show, calling them losers and just making fun of them. It was beautiful. And for that to carry over into season four provided a nice bridge, I think, between the 2 years.
Amo, if they're in Sheamus' corner at WrestleMania, I will get my jersey ass to Atlanta, and I will dropkick someone, I swear to God.
Yeah, I'm not even in Atlanta, and I found that threatening, frankly. The anger.
Do you think Sheamus will call them the Fella Twins?
I hope. speaking of the quote that I just threw down for... which probably went over a lot of people's heads.
Threw it down.
Regardless.
Throwing quotes.
Do you think our praise of the Bellas is going to lead to us perhaps getting dropkicked? Because she's not a big fan of the Bellas.
That hurt because I've been a big Bella backer for, I guess, dating back to Nikki when she started being mean to everybody.
And you think Isabella would be a fan of the Bellas?
Absolutely, I would.
She is a Bella. Oh, yes.
You made up for the joke earlier, which was horrible.
Can't even remember it.
Yeah, but you've redeemed yourself big time, sir. I think that joke. Justin. I think that joke was the double date of this show. I can feel a fire having been set under us now with that. And people are at home going, yo, we need to do a show on the show that Alan, Amo, and Justin did about NXT. But,
here's the thing about the date that made me laugh, is that one of them asked, you know, they were kind of ignoring Bateman. One of them asked Daniel Bryan, so where's your belt? As if he would bring his belt to a restaurant date situation, like Tim Sylvia.
What a restaurant it was, by the way.
It was ludicrous.
Described his restaurant to us.
It was a very small room with both
balls
visible on the left and right, and could have just been, I don't know, a dressing room maybe, one person.
Where tables were into, and
yeah, they threw in three tables and
cheap tablecloths
on them, and there you go. That's ambiance.
Yes, fully lit room, I might add, and the Bellas end up storming out of this date situation when Bateman.
Well, that was no, Alan. That's 100%.
Oh, sorry. Bateman stormed out. Bateman, who was wearing American flag Zubats because. Chicks and America go hand in hand, and he was wearing
Jimmy Lazor's tribute.
It was. I saw a guy at the weekend wearing the American flag Zubaz. It was pretty cool. But he was there in a Zubaz, and he was kind of him and the Bellas weren't really getting on. They were kind of flirting with Daniel Bryan and paying him no attention. He was making comments they didn't like. Things were just going awry in general, and Bateman had enough, and he stormed out and threw a bag of change down on the table as he left, and the Bellas weren't impressed. And then Daniel Bryan went with his buddy Bateman, and they were less impressed.
Well, they spilled their drink on his pants, at which point he said, "No, my pants." And he then said this about 4 times. Then he got angry. Then he ran off.
Poor guy.
So, yeah.
This should cover your drinks, Nikki. See you never.
Yep, so that was the double date, and Bateman, as I mentioned, he improved quite greatly as a wrestler, and he had a pretty good match with Daniel Bryan towards the end of the season. He challenged his pro to a match, and it came off quite well. And I suppose some other Derek Bateman highlights would be the Steve Blackman tribute act that was going on between him and Danielson, in terms of they were just shoehorning in Steve Blackman references whenever they could throughout the season.
I think the genesis of that came when the Bateman-Bryan TV relationship started with Daniel trying to teach him the important facets of submission wrestling, and Bateman was more keen on just spacing out being Derek Bateman. And so one time he was reading the new book of trivia that came out, and he said, he asked Daniel the quick question, "What's Steve Blackman's favorite weapon?" And he said, "Sticks!" And it turns out that wasn't in the book. It was just it was his own fun fact, and it took off from there. The next big thing they did was when they rigged the dating game, right?
Yeah, they rigged the dating game where you had to guess what the other person's answer would be to various questions, and that these two had conspired to kind of know what the other was going to say, and they would be not related to the questions at all, so it would be like, "What's your favorite color?" Steve Blackman, and not surprisingly, Danielson would have written down Steve Blackman on his thing, and they were up to no good. And the Steve Blackman, the pinnacle of that that whole story arc of the season was at one point when Dolph Ziggler, who we will certainly talk about in great detail later, screamed at the top of his voice, "Steve Blackman is not a real person."
He also said during that dating game, when they got rid of the questions, right, he said very, in a sort of reserved manner, "I think wrestling isn't real." Yes. Must say, Dolph Ziggler, I had no idea who he was until this time. I thought he was a dolphin, but he was very good.
He would have fit back in 1991 with the human boat and the dragon and all those guys hanging around.
Had some sort of Shamu gimmick.
He
does like big guys.
Do you wanna maybe do like sidebars as we talk about the different guys, and like this could be our Dolph Ziggler sidebars as we've already started talking about him?
I think as far as the stories of season 4, that Dolph would be the second biggest one, behind Derek Bateman and ahead of the people who actually were the finalists.
Okay, so let's just work Dolph in here.
Super Dolph. Dolphin.
Yes. Hey ho.
That one was for you.
Thank you, Justin. It was much.
There's this wrestler. Anyway.
It was much appreciated. The whole deal with Dolph Ziggler was that he was a pro, and he was a pro for two different guys during the season. But of course, the pros sit on their high horse, literally, their high chair, literally, up at the entrance ramp, and they all have live mics, which never get turned off during the show for whatever reason. They're always on, and.
Most importantly, they're always bored.
Yeah. They're always bored, and they always have a live mic. And when you are, I guess, secure in your position in the company and have kind of become carded a niche as somewhat of a star for yourself, you can be pretty comfortable at times to... Well, I think it became something that he became comfortable as the season rolled on. He kind of
got way more relaxed about things today. Dolph tended to chime in with his live mic quite a bit during the show, and there were plenty of gems, such as at the beginning of one match where guys shook hands, Dolph goes, this is an ROH, you don't need to shake hands. And then he paused, and he goes, or is it? And another gem was when his rookie at the time, Byron Saxon, was up for public opinion, with the crowd expressing this in the form of yay or boo, as the crowd kind of gave a pretty tepid reaction, to say the least. Dolph, from the ramp, you heard, yay, I love Brian. I like Brian too. And, yeah.
He fooled everyone.
Yes, he did. He was tremendous. There was countless more incidents like that.
Can I do one?
Go for it, Amo.
My favorite was in a rendition of popular Brian Kendrick featuring TV game show The Price is Right. Saxton guessed too high. And when Matt Stryker said he was over, then old Dolphy jumped in with, that's the first time Saxon's been over.
So sweet.
And then towards the end of the season, Dolph got quite the combo going with one Ricardo Rodriguez. They had a nice little bit of a play-by-play going back and forth with each other.
I thought it was funny that Alberto Del Rio started as a pro on the show, and then it was in January, I guess, when they decided they were going to do big things with him, and all of a sudden he became too important as a prohibitive Royal Rumble favorite to be on NXT.
Yeah.
But that meant that Ricardo Rodriguez assumed his professional duties, which, if anything, only improved the show.
True, and I actually just coincidentally, nothing to do with doing this show tonight, but I was at my friend's house earlier. We were playing a nice evening game of football under floodlights, and we went back to his house afterwards for cool lemonade, turned on the TV, and checked his DVR, and there was some old episodes of NXT, so we picked one randomly, and it was the episode where Conor O'Brien faces Ricardo Rodriguez at the end of the show. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but it was so weird seeing Alberto immersed in this kind of stuff now that he's like such a big-time main event guy. It was crazy seeing him involved and all this nonsense going on around him. And I don't know, would you say it was necessary to pull him from the show because of his... Like, I think so few people watch it that it kind of doesn't matter, but at the same time, maybe you just don't want to divide his attention in terms of what he needs to focus on. So,
To some degree, you can kind of graduate from the show, but at the same time, I mean, Jericho was the world champion when he was, or for at least a month, when he was the pro on season one.
That's true. And,
I think Miz, a lot of his ascent came from the live mic situation, and he was nowhere near as funny as Dolph Ziggler, but he had a lot of confidence in just shouting people down, which isn't exactly fair when you're in a give-and-take work situation, but it impressed certain people and helped him.
Justin, were we on the show when we talked about perhaps the greatest live mic situation ever between R-Truth and William Regal?
Yeah, that was one of the many things we covered on your trivia episode.
Oh, okay, that's good. Go back and listen to that if you didn't listen to the grand trivia episode.
That would go. I mean, if I was putting together a best of NXT DVD, that would probably be the first thing that would come from season one. Or maybe the first thing would be when Jericho did commentary with Josh and Cole during some big tag match. That was good. And when Jericho would tell the announcers to talk about Wade Barrett. So those were the important, the early building blocks from which we got in season four.
And now, guys, before we move on to our next character, we're actually gonna take a pause here. We won't actually be taking a pause, but there will be a pause within the show for the first ever Dr. Keith Presents break for our sponsors. Yes.
For the latest in pro wrestling news and commentary, check out www.f4wonline.com. The site features a complete text of every issue of Figure 4 Weekly from 2005, a growing archive of past issues that will eventually span back 10 years, regular audio updates with both myself and PPH regular, Brian's friend Vince, which cover the latest news and offer recaps of every major pay-per-view from WWE, TNA, UFC, and Pride, plus a bulletin board, exclusive online extras you won't even find in the print edition, a chat feature, which is very popular during Wrestling Observer Live, and regular contests for free wrestling DVDs, CDs, and books. Rates start at just $5.95 per month, and we've got packages as low as 15 cents per day for online content and 27 cents per day for both online and home delivery. Figure 4 Weekly Online is the fastest growing news site on the internet, so please check it out today at www.f4wonline.com.
Matt Murphy says, Mick Foley was a glorified stunt artist.
Oh no, Stock Cruise is among the 10 best workers in the world.
Matt Murphy says, Vader is a big snuggly teddy bear.
Oh, Vader's a fat piece of shit. That guy's a dick.
Matt Murphy was with a man in Japan.
Now those are dirty lies and you know it. At one point in the book, though, I do say, ask Springfield, Missouri, how gay I am.
Matt Murphy called Jun Akiyama a pussy.
Okay, now that's true.
Yes, all that and so much more. The Story of Nobody and the Pursuit to Become Somebody by Matt Murphy. Available at PublishAmerica.com.
Okay, so I bet you're all confused after hearing that. But let me explain. That was a shout-out to the forefathers of this here Dr. Keith Presents show, as for long-time listeners of the tree that spawned this program, the PPH, will remember those advertisements fondly as they played on a weekly basis on that illustrious show. And I am following suit with some sponsorships of my own right now. Yes, I have big time. I have sponsors. The first of which has earned this sponsorship by the huge business deal I've struck with them, whereby the €6 I owed them for pizza the other night, that debt has been waived by giving this sponsorship on this show. What I want you to do, everyone, is check out GameGameBlog.com. There might be a www. In there, I'm not really sure. But GameGameBlog.com, where my buddy will be runs down all kinds of stuff about games, computer games, all that jazz. I'm not really a huge gamer, but I know he is, and he's big into all that stuff. So check that out if you're a gamer and might be of some interest to you. And so the Game Blog, proud sponsors of Dr. Keith Presents. Check them out. And our second sponsorship is something you can find about on the board. There are threads about it. I will link to this thread and the show. And if you are a member on the Deadfly Driver board or CZW fans or I think the Strong Style Symphony board, you will be able to come across a poster who goes by various names, which Keith is first to admit that kind of makes things awkward, but he posts under names Jack Rougeau, Jack Rougeau, Max88 on this board, and I believe Lucha Gorlust on CZW fans. And this man offers what I consider the best service for Japanese wrestling DVDs in 2011. He is the man to go to. He gets in all kinds of new stuff really, really quickly. Real hard, sort of obscure stuff from like Japanese indies, which you won't find anywhere else. All at a very good price and great service. You can rely on Max. He is an absolute pleasure to deal with. And I know I recently many times have purchased from him, and it's always a very good buying experience. And
he comes very much recommended. So if you need to get Puro DVDs, if you are sick of waiting around for whatever show or Fed you're waiting to get online and it's not surfacing, Max will have the DVDs and he'll be able to help you out. So check out his threads on the boards and yeah. So proud sponsor of Dr. Keith Presents, and with that, I will return you all to the show. And now we continue, having heard that tremendous.
What a great message.
So was it?
I, for one, will be buying that product or service.
Yeah. Before I heard it, I didn't like it. And now that I heard it, I do like it.
I had my doubts, but now, after that, I say, well done, Alan. You've procured yourself quite the sponsor.
Sponsors. There were two advertisements in there.
Oh, that's true. We sorry, I forgot the first one. The second one was so much better. The first one was shit, though. Oh, my God. I've never heard the like.
I know which one I'm putting first now. and by sponsorship, it was my friend who I owed €6 to canceled that death by by me offering him sponsorship on my show. So yeah, that was quite the business. That's what you call big business right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Can I just mention one more thing about Dolph Ziggler before we move on?
Yeah, go for it.
I have it written down on a piece of paper. Because for a while I was writing down notes on a piece of paper. And I was like, God, this is a pain. I wish I could do this on the computer. And then I realized, wait a second. That keyboard has keys on it. Or I can type things.
They even have a program called Notebook.
During the show, they made a lot of references to 90s children's sitcoms and generally sitcoms, such as Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Saved by the Bell quite a bit. But the best one, which was the hidden one, was when Bateman called Dolph Ziggler. He said that his real name was Turd Ferguson. Yes, which is a hidden double reference to Clarissa Explains It All.
Yes, it is.
When the kid was called Ferguson Darling, but his nickname was Turd Brain. So it's like a mesh. It's like a hidden mishmash of references. And this also made Dolph Ziggler very, very angry.
He almost took a bump at the fall of being called Turd Ferguson.
So it was like he actually was called Turd. He was furious. I can't believe they know. It's out there now.
Bateman had exposed him for who he really was. And then you had great moments of like Chris Masters rallying the crowd in chants of Turd Ferguson.
That was, I think, the moment that it really invested Masters in the show. The Turd Ferguson moment was when he was on board all of a sudden. And after that, you got a lot more Masters participation, too, which wasn't as funny as Dolph's, but it was nice to see him invested in anything, as he's been kind of...
He's been busy as the Superstars belt holder.
Yeah, yeah, his work has come a long way, but it seems like he's checked out from a... love of the business until Turd Ferguson happened.
At least with the Superstars belt, it's easier to carry it through airports and such.
That's true.
There. What would it not exist in?
Hey, it exists. It exists to me and Chris.
It's still real to you.
And Tyler.
Damn it.
Okay, so let's move on to a new rookie to talk about. We'll go with Connor O'Brien, who I mentioned there. Well, I mentioned this, having faced Ricardo Rodriguez in the apex of his NXT run. Conor O'Brien's deal was that he looked like a rat, and there was some dispute over whether he was a guy who embraced the fact that he looked like a rat or a guy who thought he was a rat. And Josh Matthews and Todd Grisham had quite the conversation about this once during commentary, just debating this fact. And it was never really, at least on this season, it was never really determined which was the case. Of course, now with season 5, we found out that really it was, he's on season 5 now, AMO, and he cut this actually like a really like legitimately pretty emotional kind of
promo, yeah, where he was talking about how, like, he was hiding behind a persona, and it was all due to, like, his this horrible childhood he had. He kind of gave sad examples and stuff and went into detail. It was, like, it really kind of makes you get behind him. So they're pushing him, like, his real babyface character on this new one. And But anyway, at least on season 4, he was full-on with the Ratch persona, and he'd talk about how he was going to take the cheese. And the storyline that he had revolved around Alberto and Ricardo. And Ricardo didn't really like this guy being in the fold, messing up his relationship with Alberto. And once we got a cut to a backstage in a darkened area in the bowels of the building where Ricardo was speaking Spanish on the phone, and you had great subtitles saying things like, "The rat. I hate the rat. I want to end the rat." Stuff like that. And
Audio La Rata.
Yes, what Justin said. So, Justin, give a few thoughts on this.
On the Ricardo Connor feud or on Connor in general?
How about both?
Connor, I would call my second favorite participant in season 4. And
oh, wow.
He won me over instantly when they introduced themselves in the first episode. And when handed the microphone, his first words were, "Hey." In the weirdest way possible. And that, talk about standing out. He didn't say, like, "Listen up, everybody, I'm going to beat people up, win matches, and just generally
make an impact.
The next breakout star." He said, "Hey." And from there I was sold. To find out he was a living human rat walking around as a person only made it better. And I think I don't know who does creative for NXT. I heard the name Ed Koski thrown around, but it seems to me like it would.
Is he still there?
If you consider that living, he's
like
still there.
I kind of want to know. I want a breakdown of all the writers, because everyone who I've ever known as like a writer is now someone who appears on the podcast of all the spurned writers. So like everyone who I knew was a writer now seems to no longer be one, apart from Gewurz and Mike Hayes. So. I kind of don't. Is the fat guy still there?
He's left.
Did he? Okay.
But Dave Kapoor is still there, and I think he would be the only other guy.
Oh, is that Khali's dude?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Forgot about him. Jesus.
I don't know if
how can anyone take him seriously in creative meetings with those sideburns? It's like he's like giving some big like 10-minute a soliloquy about some idea he has. Like just imagine everyone else sitting around the table staring at his sideburns.
He you know, they probably are starstruck. But
he has a sweet jacket. It says the great Khali says it glitters.
But one of the neat things is angles per se as they exist on NXT kind of only exist to amuse the people putting the show together and giving them something to do besides the double dare challenges. And so everybody to an extent kind of had their own little saga during the season. And Connor's was that his pro Alberto, he was his attention was being vied for, and Ricardo saw Connor as a threat to him, I think, and he was jealous. If you go back to the Valentine's Day SmackDown, I remember this moment where Ricardo thought Del Rio was going to say something nice about him, but then he turned it in a switchabout to a compliment about himself, and Ricardo looked very sad. So based on that characterization, I know how threatened he must have felt by Connor O'Brien, and he schemed. He wanted to get rid of the rat, and he called exterminators, and didn't it culminate in him setting a trap of cheese?
Yeah, this is what I watched earlier today, so I can talk on this. There was an elaborate trap of
like 8 pieces of bright yellow cheese leading up to a door. And Conor O'Brien just happened to be walking past this, and he goes, Well, sorry, he goes, that's me sniffing, if anyone couldn't hear. I smell cheese. Oh, look at that. Cheese. And then he looks down, and he starts picking up the cheese, and he's like, as he gets more and more of it, he's like, oh, more, more. And he gathers it all up, and then he gets to the door, and the door opens, and Ricardo says, like, hasta la vista, rata, and sprays him in the eyes and stuff, and then Conor grabs him, and they scuffle, and Alberto separates them and says they're going to have a match. So to end that week's NXT, we have a match between these two men, and Ricardo comes out in the most horrendous gear you've ever seen in your life, and a white robe that you'd find in like a cheap hotel, and he has the worst tattoos ever, and he's really pale, and he just looks horrible, and it's a great comedic foil, and he's getting beaten up, and they do a load of comedy spots, like he runs into the steps by accident, stuff like this, and eventually Conor, I mean, it's the complete upper hand, he bonked his head on the ring post, going for like a stinger splash, and was completely knocked out, like not moving a muscle for like 2 minutes while Ricardo kind of got to his feet and looked up, and Dolph screamed, no, not like this.
Not like this.
And Josh had a conniption on commentary, and Ricardo bounced off the ropes and did, like, I guess you could call it a splash, but I don't really know what it was. And it led to a cover anyway, and he got the Duke and he celebrated. Poor Conor was beaten in what turned out to be his last NXT match, because he was eliminated moments after that. He chased away Ricardo, and it came back, and then went under the ring and said,
"Go ahead."
He said his final words of, "The last thing I want to say to you people is that you really suck." The rat has left the building, and he went under the ring.
Conor was so sneaky, as befitting his rat-like nature, and I guess to go on top, not only was he a living rat, but he also seemed to be from the 40s, because he talked like a Dick Tracy gangster, and he would say, see, like those types do. And he also, do you remember the, wasn't it like a joke-telling competition?
Yes.
Where he, yeah, do you want to tackle this one?
Well, it was like an open mic something, but which was ironic, because pretty much the whole fucking thing was an open mic competition, but they had to kind of put down the other guys, and he did this by just telling, like, just retelling. I mean, he just stole material, and as you know, Alan, I'm very much opposed to the stealing of jokes, and this was just absurd. He would tell, like, your mom is so fat, she's really fat, etc. Hey.
The shame of it was, like, is that may have been when Bateman launched Turd Ferguson, or that could have been a different time. But,
well, all I know is that fucking he won. The rat won. The people were very much into this. Well known.
The jokes were deadly. Don't rag on the jokes.
Hornswoggle's biggest fan is speaking about fucking. Listen, they weren't good.
Yes. The Mythical America crowd who made 2.5 Men a big hit were won over by these borrowed jokes from, like, I guess a Friars Club roast from the 50s or hilarious jokes.
Hey, in the UK, people like A League of Their Own, so...
If you want to hear a joke, Alan, I'll tell you a joke. Okay, I have to think of a joke now. Hang on. How do you get down from an elephant?
I don't know. How do you get down from an elephant?
You don't. You get it from a duck.
I don't get it. I'm sorry. Right.
He means, Alan, the material down. Down feathers.
I was switching it up, you see? I was using the double meaning of the word, and I still don't think Alan gets it.
I don't get it at all. Wait, how do you get down from an elephant? No, you get down. What was it? No, you get down from a duck.
Do you have a down comforter? It's made of down.
What the fuck?
There's literally
a
word of down. It's a feather.
Oh, I know what you're saying now, but I've never heard of the term down for a feather.
See, I was intentionally telling a bad joke. And do you realize how hard that is for me, Alan? For me to think of something that isn't funny. It's very, very difficult.
Hey, you nailed something earlier in the show.
Listen, it was postmodern.
Can I punch up the joke?
Sure, just...
Let's try again. Okay. How do you get down from an elephant?
I don't know. How do you get down from an elephant?
You don't. You get down from having unprotected sex with Sarah Palin's son, Trig.
Wow.
Yikes.
Ooh. Ooh. Dude, we're working blue now.
See, the humor isn't that it's not a sexually transmitted disease, but...
Yeah.
Anyway.
How do you get feathers from having... It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. There you go.
Justin, you weren't... I'm glad you weren't using that kind of humor on the charity-sponsored Joe vs. the World show.
Listen, Alan, we're rule breakers here. We're renegades. We're mavericks marching to our own beat. The fucking management didn't want us to have this show, which is the reason I'm doing this. Management didn't want NXT discussed. Here I am. What's that? A rule? Hi-ya! Smash. What's that I'm stretching? It's your parameters.
Oh, I'm shaking my boots here. My career is in jeopardy with the likes of these
and
rogue rebels on the line.
There's a problem with that. He knows where to find me.
Yeah, sound makes sense.
He can stick it. Yeah.
Brian should go to Santry for one of those athletic events and lose. They get really mad and go beat you up because of it.
Yeah, I'd like to see him try. He's very small.
And you're quite tall.
There you go. The height advantage, and as we know, that's all that matters. I'm taller, therefore, victory.
And calf size. But anyway, let's move on and let's talk a little about, I don't know, Byron Saxton, another man who has been brought back on the new redemption season. Byron Saxton was a guy who used to do commentary on the old ECW and. Many people compare him to The Rock down in FCW in terms of his look and his speaking ability and stuff. And
wasn't he a news anchor?
He was a news anchor, correct.
He's also something that rhymes with anchor.
Don't say that.
He is known quite well in the world of investment banking as one of the finest. But Wow.
Don't drop the W-bomb.
Byron was, I guess, in the early stages, considered probably one of the favorites, but I think when he really positioned himself as a big-time heel, it kind of became unlikely that he was going to get the votes needed. In spite of his sassy t-shirts, self-promoted t-shirt he had, I liked his one that he had this week on the new season. But it was like a Back to the Future type t-shirt. But
what did it say?
I forget.
It said Back to the Saxton.
Yeah, that was it.
So, oh, well, that works.
He needs to study our show for some...
I guess it kind of works because he's back. So.
Yeah.
We're going
but
back.
It's on the front of the shirt.
I guess that's the element he's playing up. I like the I love, like the I heart. Was, yeah.
Yoshitatsu used to have the hottest selling piece of merchandise in New Japan in 2005 and 2006
was Yoshitatsu, who was only a young lion at the time, his t-shirt came out, as his name was Norifumi Yamamoto is, of course, Kid Yamamoto, but Norifumi Yamamoto was Yoshitatsu's name in New Japan, and he had a t-shirt which was I Love NY. Get it?
No.
Yes. And it was the hottest selling piece of merchandise. Anyway.
Can you get down from it?
Anyway.
I thought Saxon, the first week I saw that Saxon would just cruise to victory, because this was supposed to be like the lost filler season where they wouldn't use the real prospects. So I kind of thought everyone else was like ringers in the bad way, just warm bodies.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, as the season played out, I thought Saxon did, like, nothing to distinguish himself and was really eclipsed by almost everybody except the one black hole who we'll get to later. I think his verbal ability is...
White hole.
His verbal ability is great, but his content is terrible. His off-the-cuff thinking in any of those was always pretty kind of...
He did have one good moment it might have been in the first episode, the karaoke, the superstar karaoke, where he'd sing a WWE superstar's entrance theme, and he got Shawn Michaels, which admittedly was a good one to get, but he did a fine performance delivering that.
I'll give him that much.
Karaoke was hard because they'd get a name and they'd say, you're singing like Dolph Ziggler's theme. And I was like, I have literally no idea what any of the words are.
Brodus Clay got Cody Rhodes dashing.
That's got to be tough. You know.
Whoa. Yeah. Only smoke and mirrors. Whoa.
If only I'm well aware how hard it can be when you've been led into a karaoke situation unbeknownst to yourself and then not knowing the words to the song.
Oh, shut up, Amo. Shut up. You banker. Byron, yeah, like, he didn't really light World on Fire on this season. He was the source of a big moment in the show when his pro, the Masterpiece, and him, Masters was always nice and trying to help the guy, but Saxon copped a bit of an attitude. And then when Dolph Ziggler won a pros, I believe it was a battle royal, maybe like a four-way or a six-way or something, but it was a pros match that Dolph won where the winner got to trade their rookie, if they so chose. And Dolph won, and he traded his rookie, the aforementioned White Hole, who we will get to in a bit, Jacob Novak, for Byron Saxon. And the two bankers, Byron and Dolph, hooked up with each other, and they formed an alliance, so to speak, and Masters was left out in the cold, as was the White Hole. And that was really the biggest thing about Saxon during the season, and he kind of tread water from that point on until he was eventually eliminated in kind of without too many fireworks.
I agree.
Same as
nice. Okay. Well, that was easy. Let's move on to
Hang on. I have a note for Byron Saxon.
Go for it.
I took notes. And in the first episode, he said to Chris Masters, while accentuating his skin with the lotion, accentuating my muscle definition with some moisturizer so I can always look my best. And then Masters paused and said, well, moisture is the essence of beauty. And I think that should be the subtitle for today's show.
No, because that would lead people to really question what we talk about on this show.
Well, that's it. That's how we get punters in. You tease them. Moisture is the essence of beauty, and nude
was
of Stephanie McMahon. That's what's on the show.
Click, click, click.
Clip, click, click. I was going to go with Steve Blackman is not a real person.
I was going to go, we are mild and old.
I was going to go with Steve Diamond is not a real person.
That's okay.
Why? Justin, are you on board with that?
Turd Ferguson presents.
Because then we'll get we'll get in the punters to that. We'll be like, whoa, a Steve Blackman tribute show.
Oh yeah,
sweet.
Demographic.
What are we actually going to call the Steve Blackman tribute show then? It's going to be
Anvil, the story of Anvil.
Oh, that was...
yes. It's from.
Do you ever visit Anvil, Pennsylvania? Just.
No. Anvil, Pennsylvania is not a real city.
Yeah. Okay, so we were going to move on to, who was I going to go next? Oh yeah, the White Owl himself, since we had just brought him up. Jacob Novak.
What's wrong with Novak?
Justin, do you want to take this one?
I don't
hate him as much as, I actually have a, somewhat of a soft spot in my heart for Jacob.
I guess I kind of feel bad for him, the way he was embarrassed on the show. He became the first rookie to get fired by his pro, and it was coincidentally the same show where he was eliminated, so they were basically saying...
I don't think that was too much of a coincidence, Justin.
The thing about Novak is he's kind of tall, and he had some kind of catchphrase, moniker about being attractive. He makes this look good. And he was like anti-Bateman in terms of charisma. And
I'm going to ask the question. I'm not going to play punches here. Would Jacob Novak have been a million times better if he didn't have that huge nose?
Oh, I thought you were going to say that huge jacket.
Oh, the jacket was terrible.
Jacket made him. Oh, it was a great jacket.
As Dolph pointed out, it was a very cheap-looking jacket.
I don't know, Alan. It's hard for me to conceive of a world with a... But, I mean, that's fixable. They have ways to change that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if the nose is going to instill a bunch of confidence in him.
No.
He seemed from the beginning like he was going to get a big season playing arc. Because in season 3, there was a love triangle between Vicky Guerrero, Dolph Ziggler, and Caitlyn. And then this was going to be... The gender role reversal, where this time Ziggler, his relationship would be threatened by a hot, young, virile pro in Novak. And Novak hit on Vicky Guerrero one or two times, and then that was all we saw of their burgeoning romance.
Amo, take it away. I'm typing in something on my computer here.
What are you typing?
I'm sending someone a message to tell them I'm doing my show and back off.
Wow. Step off. Tell them to step off. But, yeah, I had no problem with Novak. I think he was suitably dull. Like he didn't offer really anything other than having a jacket. Although in one episode where they did a talent competition, his talent was sitting on a chair and posing, which I'm fine with. You know, that's... That kind
oh
of
yeah, he let his hair down and he put on the sunglasses.
Oh my god. You know, that kind of boasting and showboating.
That ruffled your feathers, did it, Emma? In a good way?
My down? Yeah, it was good stuff. No, I mean, yeah, he was, there was nothing to him and he was never going to win. But I don't think he was a black hole. He wasn't a black hole. He was, I don't know. He was like the pavement or something. He was just there. You don't really appreciate him. It's like a traffic cone.
You need Jacob Novak's on any good season of NXT, I think, because you don't want to miss the first guy who's out too terribly.
No, and you need a straight man as well to kind of accentuate the positives of the hilarious other people.
I guess
right,
what
Alan?
Sours me... what soured me the most... address his statement, Alan. Go ahead.
Oh no, I had nothing to say. This was ninja.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
When he went out, when someone's eliminated on NXT, they're given the microphone and they usually do one of two things. They either get real about it and say this was the best experience that I've had and I'm not giving up, or they blame the fans. And it's their time, you know. It's their moment. They've earned it. They've put in the work. and let them give a dignified goodbye. And his pro, or the pro he had up until like 30 minutes prior before he dumped him, Dolph, broke from protocol and started talking over his goodbye interview. And I think he shouted boring and started making fun of him and calling him a failure. And Ziggler basically was holding a big placard that says, "Punch me and let me take a bump." And he got in his face and he was insulting him and running him down. And Novak would not punch him. And I kind of understand, because if you're a rookie on that show, you probably don't want to just haul off and attack one of the pros, because you don't...
Who will be like main eventing the Royal Rumble.
Right, if you're allowed to do that. But I think Dolph would have been cool with it. And Chris Masters, Johnny on the Spot, thankfully saved the day and put him in the master lock. But it was sad for Novak that Dolph was basically, with his eyes, saying, "Punch me, punch me, punch me," and he wouldn't.
I wonder if Chris Masters got any flack for putting the Royal Rumble main event here in the master lock. I'm guessing not. Jacob, I don't really have any other big memories of Jacob at all. I just remember the time he was hitting on Vicky was just incredibly awkward and sleazy. And I think
he was no Dr. Love. I don't think Novak would be a very good wingman.
No.
Very good doctor.
One last thing to mention about Novak is on the final episode when they brought back the eliminated rookies to have a tag match, a redemption tag match, if you will. Novak bailed and left Byron Saxton alone to get beat. Novak kind of went up the ramp. Now those two are both in the redemption season, so perhaps they will be feuding. And I guess it kind of was playing back to the fact that Saxton was the guy that was chosen by Dolph over him, so he resents Saxton. But let's move on to. I suppose we'll save the winner for last. So we'll go with Brodus Clay, man who you may have seen on Raw this past week and been like, "Who is this guy? Who is this big guy, Brodus Clay? What is he?" And
who was that?
I don't know.
Macho Man.
He's a Macho Man.
Oh, he's not.
No, he's doing the song written by Simon Cowell. Have you ever heard that song?
By Simon Cowell?
Yeah, Simon Cowell did an album for the WWF back in the early 90s with a song called "Speaking from the Heart" about the Macho Man and his good work around the world with, like, underprivileged kids and stuff.
I see. Yeah. And his good work with an overprivileged kid got him fired.
What?
And his good work with an overprivileged kid got him fired.
Macho Man or Simon Cowell?
Macho Man.
It's
a reference to it.
Yeah, I knew the Steph theme, I think, maybe because I initially thought you were talking about Simon Cowell, so I was confused.
Well, maybe he did, actually. Presumably. He's very successful.
The song goes a bit, because it's Simon Cowell, and he's a British man, it was like, I guess he used British singers, they say Macho Man instead of Macho Man, so it's like, "Who gets the party started? He's the Macho Man." And it kind of is weird, but there is an interlude from Macho Man in the song itself where he kind of, it slows down and he comes in and talks and he's like, "Everywhere you go, yeah, from the moon to the stars, just know I'll be with you, yeah." And it's quite lovely. Oh yeah, the other line is, "Soaring with the eagles, slithering with the snakes, everywhere you go, Macho Man's by your side, yeah." So, anyway. Where are we going with this? Brodus Clay. That's where we're going. Brodus Clay.
Cheer.
Cheer.
That's the name of the show. Dr. Keith presents Shia.
And you do know that. Brodus Clay is known for a few things. Of course, that catchphrase, and you do know that. His promos, which were really fantastic, and the best of which was said for the final segment of the final show of NXT, and which was arguably like the best promo in WWE in like a year, apart from The Rock. The other thing he was known for is the fact that he was a large man, a very large man. Perhaps in terms of kind of bulky fat mass, the biggest it's been in WWE in a while. He's not just like a fat mess. He's an intimidating looking, big, stockily built guy, and he's got a hell of a face for a big monster heel. I'd heard he wasn't the best in SCW, but he really he delivered quite well for his role. Like, he was throwing guys around with cool suplexes, and he'd do the tongue and death grip, which was a nice touch. And he displayed quite the knowledge for like old school WWF. And when I say old school, he was very vociferous in the fact that he was like, His specialty was the old stuff. They asked him once, they were doing a thing where you'd pick, like 80s WWF or, 90s or recent day or whatever, and he's, just very strongly said, 80s. And then, proceeds, nail all the questions.
He knew that Lou Albano managed the British Bulldogs.
Yeah. Team title. Yeah. But then they'd, ask him some, really easy question about something that happened 3 years ago, and he wouldn't have a bean. He'd say something stupid as the answer. I remember one time was a question about which WrestleMania did this happen on or something, and his answer was SummerSlam. Something like that.
That trivia was actually kind of an endearing thing, because Brodus and Bateman both showed a surprising amount of product knowledge.
Johnny Curtis did from time to time. Well, in fairness, they all had glimpses of being really knowledgeable about stuff. Every single one of them that partaked in the trivia would at times get a really good answer to something. I think it was Byron nailed that Edge won his first title in WWF from Jeff Jarrett.
No, that was Bateman. Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, sorry.
He didn't even hesitate.
Yeah, there was also times for pretty much everyone where they'd get something wrong, where I'd be screaming at the TV, "No, you idiot! Oh, god damn!"
Well, the great moment for Bateman, and I don't want to do Brodus a disservice, there's plenty to say about him, was one of the questions was this was the pay-per-view where The Undertaker finally met Kane, and Bateman said, Bad Blood 97, and they said, wrong, WrestleMania 14, and you could just see the anger on his face that, whatever intern put that question together didn't understand what he was trying to say.
Yeah. He was Matt Stryker was wrong answer, and he's, no, it's the right answer. But I think there was another incident of that during the season. I remember something like that, but back to Brodus Clay. He did quite well for himself all the way through the season. In probably the first two-thirds of the season, he was embroiled in the Maurice DiBiase story arc, which we haven't got into at all, but it was a major part of the season, where basically their never-ending breakup was happening on the air, and I still don't know if that's been fully culminated yet. I really feel there needs to be some kind of big payoff to that. Perhaps the Superstars angle with Yoshitatsu was said payoff. But Brodus was having to put up with their kind of squabbles, and
it was costing him competitions.
It was, and Ted DiBiase would take out his frustration at Maurice's bitching on Brodus. And Brodus was initially pretty... I remember there was one of their initial interactions was Brodus kind of saying, I'm glad to have you as my pro. I think you're going to help me loads. And Ted goes, are you being condescending to me? Because he was in a bad mood. And Brodus said, yo, man, ain't no one being condescending. Oh, jeez, here I go again. Broda said, "Yo, man, ain't nobody being condescending," and Ted. They were Ted was pissed at him and was really wrongly so. And anyway, Ted got Maurice to slap Brodus at one point. Brodus kind of
threw her shoe at Brodus after he accidentally caused a costly disqualification due to mistimed interference.
Yeah. So it was a tumultuous relationship at best, and that's where that word comes. When I was playing aforementioned soccer earlier, the surface we were playing on was kind of dodgy to say the least, and I said to my friends, "This is quite the tumultuous surface we're playing on," and they're like, "That's not how you use that word." I was like, "How do you use that word?" I was kind of racking my brain. And there you go, tumultuous relationship. That's where that comes in. But anyway, another window into the life of Adam. I know
everyone with the surface.
It was just
very tumultuous.
It was just kind of grass, and it was just kind of like it hadn't really been well kept. But the long winter had its effect on the. The spring bloomingness had yet to take its course on the grass. But anyway.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. Brodus, guys, give me Amo, give me your thoughts on Brodus, guy. I've been kind of rambling about him.
You have a little bit, and grass. But he was good. He was a big guy. I liked just where Riss would be bitching about shoes, and then camera would zoom out and he'd just be standing there sort of looking idly by. Although he was a security guard, wasn't he, in a previous life?
Yeah.
For the Snoop Doggy Dog, and so I guess he was well used to, you know, people bitching, hollering in his ear. But the best one was where they had to explain, they had to like make the, I'm very bad at words, tumultuous, he was trying to make the pros guess the name of a wrestler. And as Brodus was saying the names, Maurice was just shouting the names of fashion labels.
Oh god, that was painful.
Which was just not helpful in the context of the game, and not funny in the context of human beings.
It was funny to Maurice, who, I swear to god, this can be another tangent where we talk about someone. Maurice proved in this show that, and if her Twitter didn't prove this already, she really lives in her own little Maurice world. she is the character she portrays on TV. I'm fairly 100% sure on this now, to be honest. Maurice lives in her own world, and it revolves around fashion and being sexy and,
Dick and shoes. Dick and shoes. And cigarettes.
Yeah, that's true. She was a, I don't know, I actually found her to be quite the plus on the show. She just completely kind of just ignore what was going on in the ring and just kind of chat with the commentators. Or
she flirted quite openly with Todd Grisham.
Josh! And Josh, like, I actually, like, the stuff with Todd, like, was more kind of jokey flirting, but with Josh, it was, like, legitimate flirting, and Josh was legitimately flirting back in a big way.
He was going for it, it seemed pretty clear.
Yeah, Josh was going for that live web stream or not.
Nobody was watching, so.
Yeah.
It's essentially
private. It was revealed on this show, sadly, that, throughout the series. I don't know if you remember former Sunday Night Heat co-host Rue DiBona, but she married Josh at some point, and I just presumed, because I hope for the best, that they were very happy together. But
I think I'd heard they got separated a good while ago.
Yeah, shoot comments on this show addressing that relationship.
What was that again?
I think it was during Season 3. Josh talked about he saw a lot of potential in AJ, and Cole said, like, oh, maybe maybe we'll get together. And Josh said that he met his last wife on the show and it didn't go so well or something like that.
What was her name? Did you say Darude Boner?
It's Rue DeBona.
Wow. Gladly.
So Brodus had to get himself away from the whole Maurice Ted squabbles, and he eventually did this by the opposite of the battle royal that also wants to trade pros. Brodus 1-1 to trade to trade rookies. Brodus 1-1 to trade pros, and he told Ted that if he was going to win it, he was going to win it for Ted. He had no intention of trading him, and then of course he won, and he kicked Ted to the curb and beat his ass, and they had a match, and he beat him, and just jobbed Ted out. And another interesting thing about Brodus is that not only did he beat Ted, but he got a clean win over R-Truth in like 4 minutes, about 2 weeks before R-Truth's main event of the pay-per-view. And it was even before R-Truth did the whole getting the name of the city wrong, which pissed people off. So interesting that Brodus was handled like that, which is rare for an NXT dude. As I mentioned in season one, they're often positioned as bad at the wrestling.
Had Brodus even lost a match until he lost to Christian on Monday? I don't think so.
No, he was like, he had lost matches, but I'm not sure if he had taken pins or what, because he was 7-3 was his record. They said he was 7-3 and Johnny was 3-7. So they were like a mirror image. So he got to trade as pro and he picked Alberto, who obviously, Ted, about a week later, was gone. So Ricardo became his pro. And unlike their tumultuous relationships with their past rookies and pros, they got on really well with each other. They had a good relationship. They complimented each other well.
Because Ricardo then took his introduction capabilities, which he would do begrudgingly for Conor O'Brien. He would say, like, "Bienvenidos, Conor O'Brien." But he had all the enthusiasm was back for Brodus Clay.
I can't do that or thing. Do you know how envious I am of you? Emil, can you do that? Is that just something we Irish can't do?
Well, I can't do it either. But I imagine Irish people can do it.
I don't think we can.
Well, let's do a poll.
So if you're Irish, you could roll your oars. Like, Robert. Then please.
We don't roll our oars, but we do ignore our H's. So it's all good. We got skills.
I don't get it. Was that a joke?
Yeah.
It's a statement.
It's like, we ignore our H's.
Yeah.
What?
Like
triple, you know, H.
Tree. You know.
Tree count.
Oh yeah.
Two lumberjacks go for a job and say, "Oh, I'm sorry. They want tree fellas, and there's only two of us."
I gotcha.
Down, duck, etc.
I wanted to say, I didn't want Maurice to go without any praise from me, because if you could carry yourself as more of a superstar on a web show for like third tier roster members who were forced to be on it, I don't know if she could have done it. She had like so much star power, and I think it's a shame that she didn't end up with The Miz, because then she'd be like this main event act and could be like kind of
Dave Meltzer's wet dream.
Kind of a big deal. Although this is so dour that it kind of makes me sad now that to think that serious Miz and she would have to be around. But she could.
Miz is very dour.
I think so.
It's real sulky, sulky man.
But, who do you ever beat, Alan? Who do you ever beat? No one. That's a fact.
Literally no one. And for Brodus, the first appealing thing about him was actually on the last episode of Season 3 when they introduced the guys for the next year. And they have that footage of them in like the empty FCW ring bumping people. And his testimonial, he said his nickname was the Mastodon of Mayhem, and that he would suplex fools all over the place, and I think he called himself like the world's the biggest suplex machine in the world or something like that. And then it goes back to Cole and Josh, and Cole has the most bemused look on his face, and he stares straight at the camera and he goes, "I know someone who's going to be pissed about that," or something along those lines. And then later during another, it must have been that long Aja or Naomi somebody match, when Cole, as he often did, got bored, and then he just goes, "I wish the Mastodon of Mayhem would come out and just suplex everybody right now." Brodus was endeared to me from the start.
I am. Two Brodus things that popped into my head there while you were talking about that was I've already forgotten one of them. Brodus had in one of those was going towards the for the last segment or for the last show, they had they kind of showed the guys in that sort of FCW setting where they film them, and they're kind of wearing kind of their Sunday best, and Brodus was wearing like this kind of real pimped out kind of suit type thing, and he had a Triple H style what do you call them, like those backwards beret type hats. Is there a name for them?
That'll suffice.
Okay. That's a reb.
Oh, Avo. It spelled out MON on one side of it, and then on the other side it had OUS. So MONOUS, and in between was a big star. Work that out.
I get it.
Yes. And I was like, who thinks of something like that? I don't know. And as I lose my voice here, sorry, I'll have a sip of water.
What a pro.
And the other thing, which, I forgot the other
moisture
thing.
Is the essence of beauty.
And the essence of a well lubricated throat.
Oh, God.
I didn't even intend that. Yeah, I swear.
That's the worst thing yet.
Looks like two baby pigs fighting in a gurney sack. You got a nice wiggle.
Oh, dear Lord. I fucking forget the other thing I was going to say about Brodus. So
Brodus.
It'll come back to me when you guys...
He knocked over things in those challenges. Kind of ran through them.
Yeah, he shit his way through the obstacle course.
He just smashed it. If he was in Police Academy.
Oh, I know. Well. The two other things about Brodus, another one just popped into my head there. He changed his gear in midway through the season. He had the plain black singlet, which kind of wasn't the most flattering, and then he got a new singlet with shit and then an exclamation point at the end of it. But it was like written in such a sort of Comic Sans type font that it kind of really didn't look the most all that intimidating. And also, like, I don't know how, I'm sure there's different ways you could spell that sound, but he spelt it S-H-E-E-E, so it just, yeah, she written on his singlet in nice, happy Comic Sans letters, which was, I don't know, it didn't really do him justice. And then, apparently, I wasn't the only one that thought this, because on Raw, he showed up, and I don't know if he was back to the old original singlet. I don't think he was, because it didn't look as unflattering, but he just had a plain black singlet. And the other thing that was that I'd forgotten, now I've since remembered, was that he was initially Josh Matthews' pick to win it all. And then Josh changed his pick. He was all about Brodus. Bigging up Brodus all the time in commentary. But then, when seemingly shoot Josh Matthews watched the Super Bowl with Derek Bateman, and they became legit best friends, and Josh was like, "He's my best friend now. I'm picking him. I'm on his bandwagon," just completely openly, and he'd be always like,
You know, the other day when I was hanging out with Derek Bateman, he told this really funny joke. And I was like, ha, you're so funny, Derek Bateman.
I thought one of the nice things about Brodus on the show, that for someone that big, the wrestling is an illusion. And if you're big and tough, everyone has to be like scared of you, and you can never get beaten or anything like that. But he, even though he was presented as a monster, he would let Johnny Curtis slap him like almost every week, and that was like probably big for Curtis as far as you can achieve anything in the like course of the show that impacts how you're going to do on it. I mean, I don't think they were shoot slaps. I'm sure he had carte blanche to slap at appropriate time.
We'll get to this now in a minute because we'll move on and talk about Johnny Curtis. But they kind of did the old Madison Square Garden click break kayfabe and seemingly pretty legit kind of embraced each other. So you could see they were kind of close to each other. So it wouldn't surprise me that they had kind of worked out things like that before before the shows. But let's talk about our winner, our king, that isn't Aim Overton 1, Curtis. Johnny Curtis, who a guy who was athletic, had a good-looking chap, good body.
Who?
Yes. And I know our sister show at this point, Mike and Tom Present, Tom often talks about how Johnny Curtis is he's very much the Jim Halpert type character on NXT, and where his humor is very it's very low-key and reserved and subtle, and it's not kind of your typical over-the-top WWE in-your-face humor, which I guess Derek Bateman would be more suited for. And with Curtis, you kind of see his natural personality getting sort of beat out of him once he's used and written for by the Dave Kapoors of the world, and who may be a wonderful writer. I have actually no idea. But I guess I did quite like Curtis. He was good in the ring. I liked him a lot with his sort of comedy stuff that he did and his little quirks here and there. He was very funny doing the dancing thing that he did for Attack. And he wouldn't have been my pick to win the whole thing, but I have no huge problem with him being the winner.
I want to be fair to him, I guess. I don't want to just think of him in terms of compared to Derek Bateman, but I feel like Bateman outshone him like the sun does to a star in the sky.
Sun's cold, yeah.
What? Nuh-uh. Look at how fiery it is.
Photons, man.
Regardless, it was a statement of shining, not of heat. So, are you saying the sun doesn't make a bunch of light?
Because I know. Let's
half the fucking world who would agree with you, depending on the time of day.
Let's discuss this over a big bowl of popcorn.
He seems like a nice dude, had a good sense of humor. I wouldn't say Bateman's was more in tune with WWE, though, because Bateman had like a sense of irony that just doesn't exist. I mean, talking about chicks in America and making them like deliberate over-the-top punchlines is not really how they do business. But
that's true, but they at the same time might not actually get that it's the irony that he's going for, and they might just think that's funny in a non-ironic way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Curtis has like a real dry sense of humor, and that does not...
And often he mumbles. That's one thing that is very much uncommon in the, again, over-the-top, non-subtle WWE world where everyone's vociferous and boisterous. Curtis will often mumble jokes and mumble just kind of comments or
asides and things go ahead.
It's just stuff that you really have to be paying close attention to notice, and it's very anti-Vince McMahon. It's not something Vince would be you can't imagine Vince making a comment like that.
He does not demonstrate a great deal of ruthless aggression.
No.
He's gonna do his debut, whatever this aggression promo is.
It's just gonna be, it's my dream to compete, and I want to win, so yeah. But we can get into the results later. That's, I know, gonna be the big point of contention between us, maybe. Or, well, not that we disagree, just that you can justify Johnny winning and I cannot.
By his awesome dive that he did, I think it was in the second last show, he did this freaking over-the-top, like, flipping tope deal that was crazy, and I just really didn't see it coming from him, and that was really cool. And he also has the sweet Kendo-esque guillotine leg drop that he gets some crazy height on. I know Todd Grisham likes to make comments about guys having out of the gym hops, as he calls it. That is one very, very much a case of that.
He does seem like a good athlete. Does that even like factor into why someone would win on the show? I don't.
Well, I guess it does in theory.
I mean, I guess it couldn't hurt. But the people they like from the show, like Alex Riley, couldn't even not fall out of a battle royal on purpose. So.
True.
But yeah, Johnny Curtis seems like a swell dude, and I think he would have been an excellent runner-up or third runner-up with a main roster spot to come eventually.
I'm going to need some examples of this understated humor, because maybe in my fast-forwarding of matches, which is the opposite of what you're supposed to do, then that maybe I just missed some of this, because I didn't see much of it. And I'm the kind of guy who'd be looking for the understated mumbler. I'd get right behind him. I didn't see anything.
I think it was so understated that I can't think of anything.
I don't think his big speaking segments that weren't in the ring were either the pre-taped things where he talks about himself, and that was kind of funny, I remember. He was a little tongue-in-cheek and self-deprecating, and then he had those things with R-Truth
that were clearly scripted and terrible.
Yeah.
So
I remember him being very earnest in the ring, being like, you know, Brodus Clay, I really respect you. You're a great competitor. I don't want to say anything bad about you, but you know, NXT, yeah, Dayton, Ohio. Yeah, great.
There were a lot of times when Bateman would say something super duper awesome just before him, and he really had nowhere to go from there. And just so he would, yeah, and then he would just slap Brodus Clay. So when in doubt, slap Brodus Clay.
Anything else you want to say about our winner? I really liked his promo at the end, and I forgot to mention Brodus's promo at the end when Matt asked him his thoughts, and Brodus did this promo about how he had been in the corner with his head down, like crying into the turnbuckle, and then he kind of went from that kind of sobbing to just complete anger face, and talked about how the fans took his dream away, so now he was going to take their heroes away, and it was like a legitimate, I know I keep saying this, but this was a legit real home run of a promo, and it was really good stuff. And I really hope some people, like higher ups, heard this, because that's a star making promo if ever I saw one. And Johnny Curtis, his one when he won was just a real emotional kind of legit promo. He talked about how his dad worked. God, fucking, it was something crazy. Like his dad worked like 18 hours. I don't know if people, I'm sure he exaggerated that slightly, but that. The thought of someone working an 18-hour day and just like
29 hours a day, bust his ass down the mine.
But like, I know there are people that do that, do work 18-hour days, and I just, I don't know. I just can't fathom that, considering I moan when I have to work until 6 o'clock in the evening, greatly. And God forbid you didn't want to be around me the weeks I had to work till like 8 o'clock. I was killing people. When I hear about people doing 18-hour days, this is some weird tangent I'm going off on. But anyway, he basically cut an emotional promo on top of his dad doing all that sacrifice to look after him and his sister, and now he made it. It was a nice babyface moment. And R-Truth was there as pro. They kind of had this weird bump in the road where they teased dissension between them and kind of never went back to it. It was just kind of odd. But overall, they stayed friends throughout and were very close at the end. And R-Truth was real happy for him, and they did the what's up together, and it was just nice stuff. And then they're going for the tag titles.
They sure are. Look out. The core. Look out, core.
Yes.
And straight to the core.
Yeah, we also skipped over what I thought may have been the most adorable thing that happened all year, which is different from the best, and that was
I know what you're getting at.
The same week where R-Truth wrestled Alberto Del Rio and on Raw, and he was counted out or something. He was distracted because Ricardo got in his face with a microphone and said, Hey, what's up? Que pasa? Is that what happened?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay. So then NXT rolls around the next night, and either Truth or Curtis had a match, and I think they came out to his music, but he wasn't singing. So the only pros left on the ramp, because maybe it was... Was it like Truth and Curtis versus Bateman and Brian, and maybe Ted and Maurice had been destroyed by Brodus earlier in the episode? So by the end of the show, the only three pros left at the top were the incredible trio of Dolph Ziggler, Ricardo Rodriguez, and Chris Masters. During the playing of the seminal R-Truth hit What's Up Without Words, every time the chorus would come around, the three of them, together, would shout, Que pasa? And the spirit and the humanity and the camaraderie of that, I'll never get over it. It's one of those things where it could only happen on NXT, and how anyone could dislike NXT after seeing something magical like that play out just confounds me.
Yeah, Justin, if you can find a link to that video, actually put that up in the thread. What was I going to say? Amos, do you have thoughts as far as the final result? Would you have gone with Bateman, I guess, as well as Justin to win the whole thing?
I was thinking Bateman. I couldn't see any other way. And then in the end, I thought maybe they'd go with the big man, bro. But
big bro.
How do they work out the winner anyway? Is it just votes or is it worked? Worked. Look at me.
It was. I don't know. They always claim there is voting. I know there is voting on the website that you could do, and the Bateman would be on his Twitter talking about voting. Oh, that's something I forgot. Post elimination, Bateman had this awesome video where he there was this door and. I don't know, Justin, do you think this door was put up specifically for Derek Bateman's skit, or was there just a door there? Like, it was very strange. I would have thought Bateman had that kind of stroke to be like, hey, so I'm going to need this door. I want to put over there. If you could build that for me, that would be great. It was just a door in the middle of the car park with, like, nothing either side of it, just a random door standing up, and he went through the door and the way out and made some jokes, and it was very funny. But I don't know why that door would have been there.
I might guess, and it's only a guess, that they were just backstage and he happened to see this weirdly placed door from the one part of the room to the same part of the room and decided to use it in his...
But why would it have been there in the first place?
I don't know.
APA reunion.
Perhaps.
Just a prop door to put in front of the prop restaurants that they put up and tear down. But he went through it and he sang Wild and Young, and he had the voice of an angel.
Yeah, he was quite a nice singer, but yes.
It bothers me, though. It still bothers me till now, because I got real gung-ho about Derek, and I was very invested in him. And I know, like, the person who wins this doesn't really matter. It's not like the other winners.
Brodus. Do you think Brodus was, like, legit, like, upset at the end? Because I was just thinking to myself, like, why? You're probably going to be used regardless of whether you won or not.
Well, Meltzer didn't talk about that psychological torture they play, where they tell the guy who's going to win to make him think he's not going to, and vice versa. So maybe he's let down by that.
Yeah, I guess.
That's so mean.
But that was an incredible promo on the spot, if he hadn't like thought about what he was going to say beforehand, because it just they gave him the mic and he did this like classic 1970s heel promo.
With an urban twist.
Yeah. Yeah.
An urban twist. Fucking Richard Blackwood over here.
I like Justin laughing. Did Richard Blackwood's expansion to America really make that much of an imprint on you, Justin?
I was just thinking about when I said Shia.
Okay. I was a bit worried there that Richard Blackwood had more success in America than I
had. I don't think he did. He had no success.
He had no success, despite his best attempts. I completely forgot he existed until you mentioned his name. I'm going to Google him to see what he's up to in a few minutes for them. Who did he host? He was on Select, wasn't he?
He was on a number of MTV thingies, and I think he was on a few Channel 4 late night Friday night things.
He grew past MTV. He got too big for those boots. But guys, the initial plan was that we were going to kind of talk about each character and then talk about, I don't know, segments, and then talk about pros. We've kind of covered everything within talking about the characters, which I very quickly realized how that was going to go when we started talking. But is there anything we've left out that is worth discussing? Perhaps, Amos, something in your notes.
I'm just trying to look for any jokes I've written down, because I sometimes do that.
While you're doing that, Justin, do you have anything?
Can you think of a... To me, this is like just the weirdest decision in one of these all-important contests they've made since Nydia Gennard beat Taylor Tough Enough 1 because she was...
You're not still harping on about Bateman losing, are you? Jesus Christ, man, get over it.
Well, neither of you justified why it could happen. I could understand. That's the thing that is just makes this so gnaw away at me, is I could understand if Brodus Clay won because he is big and they could book him as a monster.
Well,
but he didn't even win.
It depends. Do you think it's a WWE decision, or do you think it came down to fan voting? I will attempt to give you reasons for whichever you choose.
I don't think fan voting is real.
Okay.
If it was, I don't see how Bateman, who is like the only one of those guys who got over to any degree, could have not won the fan voting by a pretty healthy margin.
All right. Well, if it is, in fact, a WWE rigged thing and they just decide who they want to win, I say they just saw R-Truth and Curtis as being A, team they wanted to have going for the titles. B, they just saw more, I don't know, they thought Curtis was better looking. It would just be as simple as that. He's a very good looking man.
Alan's back to this again. That's a few times he's mentioned it now.
Maybe it was just that. I don't know. But
it's funny how you say Alan.
Remember, I believe Brodus had a immunity. So, and also, that's another thing. Like, how do the immunities, like, if the immunities are real, which you have to think they are, because they're not rigging things like the trivia or rigging like the obstacle courses and stuff like that. So the immunity points are real, which means the guy who has the immunity is real, which means WWE can't completely rig the event. Because if they wanted to get rid of Brodus Clay at that stage, he had immunity, so they couldn't. It's really hard to know, and so that's why I don't think you should dwell on it so much, man. Get over it.
Well, you're saying for him to get over it, yet he just referenced the fact of fucking Nydia 13 years ago or 10 years ago beat Taylor Swift in Tough Enough.
Oh, Taylor Swift now has something to console herself, put a big bag of popcorn.
I'm going to let you finish, but Nydia is the winner of Tough Enough.
Yeah, but Taylor has one of the greatest wrestling marriages of all time.
Poor Alan. No idea.
What?
Okay.
Brian Kendrick.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter.
Okay. anyway.
I feel like is if I keep the show going long enough with us that we'll somehow get news that they reverse the decision. Things are isn't
let's not keep it too long because the old 2-hour watershed of possibly potential uploaded problems for that. Will
you need to Isabella this one and cut out all the dead time to make it flow smoothly?
Cut out the time for my hair looks bad.
All the time.
Hey,
la, la, la.
You're one to talk, fringe boy.
Here he goes.
Anyway, Amo, did you find any other jokes you had to tell?
Yes, on the Grace Under Pressure challenge at the end, they had to make a jigsaw and shit like that. Oh no, they didn't have to make a jigsaw. I had a list of things that they should have done. One of them being make a jigsaw. Another one being tie a tie. The other one was identify an isosceles triangle from a list of triangles. Which isn't bad.
Isosceles is when they're all equal sides, is it?
Well, I can't give out any spoilers. No tips in this challenge.
No, tell me. I actually want to know. This is going to gnaw away at me. Because equilaterals when they're all equal sides, isn't it? And isosceles is where the... Justin, you're a teacher?
Yeah, it's where the two sides are the longest, aren't they? It's two big, two the same size, okay. And then there's one shorter.
Yeah, that's isosceles. Equilaterals, they're all equal, and right angled is when it's a right angle.
Yeah.
Hypotenuse.
Yeah.
Pythagoras. Cool.
Okay, you'll win the challenge, okay? Just calm down.
Flashbacks to maths, leaving cert.
Yeah. Other ideas? Explain the offside rule to an American / woman. look at the WrestleMania logo poster in an interesting way.
Watch it.
Convince Brian Alvarez to slow down during the intro to Wrestling Observer Radio, which I cannot do, it seems. And interrupt Dave Meltzer. Those are the challenges that need to be undertaken.
I think I interrupted Dave once on Ed and San Antonio show. Dave was just going off on one, and I really wanted to kind of get a point in, and I just, like a dog with a bone, I was just going to talk over him until he shut up, and it worked. And it was very satisfying. But,
there you go. Well done. You could be the next, F4W rookie winner.
The next breakout star.
You could have your own show.
Yeah.
Well, you said yeah there. That was a bit Dave Meltzer to like putting down a Brian Alvarez joke. So I think you could be. You have the potential to host a big show.
Remember when they talked about water? That was brilliant. okay, guys. I think before we go, I want to ask you both a couple of questions.
I accept.
Is that the first question?
I'm thinking of the questions on the spot here. First question. What was your favorite NXT challenge moment?
Can I go first?
Yes, Amo, go first.
When Bateman, he lost the challenge, but it went to like a decision on the big screen. And before he had won, and he took out an American flag, he started waving it. And then when the decision was reversed, he appealed by saying, "But I have an American flag." It's very funny. There you go.
Justin, feel free to mention something we've already talked about. That's okay. It's within the rules.
About 20 things that Derek Bateman did. But in the non-Bateman category, I liked it when it was the talent show and Brodus Clay brought out Michael Cole to be his hype man and take a whole speech and make it cool by saying Shia behind him.
Yes, that was amazing. Who would ever think of that being a talent except Brodus Clay? What would be your favorite tender moment between pro and rookie? Amo.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm kind of putting these on the spot here. I'll say one. My favorite Tender moment was as Daniel Bryan was teaching Derek Bateman leg locks, and he booted him right in the face in a loving way.
Submission wrestling.
Yes, I like that. Justin, anything comes to mind?
Is that when Derek said, "Whoa, take it easy. I'm just a rookie."
Yeah, it was. That was brilliant.
Tender moments, I guess, maybe their pregame chat before the double date when Daniel was skeptical at just how helpful Bateman would be to him in this endeavor. And Derek said, "I'm a ladies' man. Your mother told me."
Did Brian have a response to that?
He had got an ugly look on his face, but yeah, he let it slide.
I liked when Gail Kim showed up on the scene, and Derek goes, "Hi, Gail." Oh, hey, Gail. Any other questions? I don't think so. So I think, guys, we'll leave it there. NXT Season 4 was a monumental event, and one we very much enjoyed. And we will, I know I'll go back and look at things from this show. For starters, the K-Pasa entrance, because I don't really remember it as vividly as Justin does, so I'm looking forward to seeing the video. And yeah, I'm going to probably, 5 years from now, go back and watch stuff from this season and enjoy it greatly. So, which will be quite the thing for a 31-year-old man to be doing, but nevertheless. Amo, do you want to give a few final thoughts on what NXT meant to you?
What it meant to me? Meant I had to watch a show about wrestling, which was, you know,
novel concept.
It's unique. I'll say that. You know, it's a. But I enjoyed it merely because it didn't have the same tired format of, you know, regular wrestling where there was actually wrestling, you know, which is, you know, it was different and enjoyable and, dare I say, fresh. I just did.
I remember back like 4 years ago when I was just starting to buddy up to Amo online.
Oh no.
I remember.
Here we go. Embarrassing stories.
Yeah. Like,
it's like a roast.
I just assumed, like me, with him being a wrestling forum member goer that was big into seeing awesome, cool wrestling, and I remember he hooked me up with a download of some UFC, so like, I paid him back by sending him, like,
oh god,
Kobashi versus Steve Williams and some ROH stuff, and I was like, "Oh, you'll love this match, because they do a Hurricanrana from the top to the outside and all this stuff," and I was like, "Yeah, you're gonna love it. Let me know your thoughts." And I never heard his thoughts.
You refer to that as, I remember, as
you remember, do you?
You said it was like ASS, and it stood for Alan's Super something.
Alan's Super Selections, maybe.
There you go. Yeah. I could probably even find the email.
Oh my god, please do. Post that thread.
I just searched for Alan. Yeah.
There
it is. All right. So it was like Kobashi, Lionheart, Chris Jericho versus the Wild Pegasus, Chris Benoit. Now to see.
Was that sent from my Gmail account or my Aircom account?
Aircom.
Okay, I won't be able to find it then.
Various old Wrestling Observer Lives. Da-da-da. CM Punk early Straight Edge promos. Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance.
That's a match.
Roderick Strong, Matt Sydal versus a load of people that I can't, you know, it's a long list of Japanese names. They all look the same. The names I mean on the screen, they all look the
same. Well, you have to watch all that stuff in Report Factory.
I don't imagine the rapid share links last 5 years.
What, you didn't download them at the time? God damn it, Ava.
I might have downloaded the Wrestling Observer Live with Juventud Guerrero.
A fine show. Future guest on this show. No,
I'm not implying that Amo is the Carl Pilkington of this show, but I think it would be a worthy experiment the same way that they sent him abroad just to see it torture him, is that we should make him watch a bunch of, like, 1990s All Japan wrestling matches.
Oh, and come to Germany this weekend with me, Amo.
I can't, not this, like, this weekend.
Yeah, 3 days. I'm flying out. I'm flying out in like 24 hours almost.
I can't do it.
Aw.
But I will see you in June, where we'll do some head scissor moves on Chibi's house.
I have not confirmed my attendance at this.
Off his balcony.
Only anyway.
There's enough people there. Otherwise, I'm not doing any high-flying spots.
You know how to work. Guys, we're going to wrap it up there. Justin, you'll be back in probably maybe a week or so. Maybe we'll get back on our road to WrestleMania. Boot Amo out of the car. We picked.
This was a detour.
Yeah, we detoured into a different road and picked up Amo off the side of the road and let him sit in the back seat that we fashioned out of our 2-seater convertible. And Joe Gagne loves me going with this metaphor. I know, so I'm gonna stick with it. And so we'll be back on the road. Just me and Justin talking WrestleMania, and free show, by the way. Oh my god, the amount of inside references we've made on this that are going to be going over the free show listeners' heads, but oh well. The Road to WrestleMania shows are shows me and Justin do, where we just kind of talk about the Road to WrestleMania as it stands, and we'll be back, I'd say, in a week, maybe a week and a half, to have another one of those. Just we'll do me the great pleasure of joining me again.
Oh, also, in a sudden shocking development, this ended up not being a free show. So, redact all of that from before, because there's no way that the general public would ever be exposed to what happened over the last 2 hours.
Are you sure about that?
I don't know. It's not my call.
The GM has
You influenced me into making this a free show, so now if you want to de-influence me into not making a free show, that is perfectly fine. We can do it.
I've got to be on pay-per-view. I give it away.
As I sneeze.
Whoa.
Ugh.
Are you okay?
I'm good, yeah. Some sneezes / coughs there. Anyway, Justin, if you want to change your mind and do it as our next WrestleMania show, that's cool. But we'll work that all off out off the air. And until then, everyone, see ya.
Have a fantastic week.
Enjoy NXT Redemption.
But this show is a Mobius strip, and it will end where it started. So we'll see you forever.
He raises.
See you never.
And welcome everyone to your second Dr. Keith Presents this week. And this is, of course, a free show. So welcome to those who not members of the site who are joining us for perhaps the first time to get a taste of what we offer here at Dr. Keith Presents and what we offer here at WrestlingObserver.com. We, the family, remember that, guys. I'm here with Justin Shapiro of Awesome Show This Past Weekend fame, and I'm also here with a man who has been bearing the brunt of Ricky Steamboat's chops and arm drags in recent times. King Haku! It's King Amo. Amo, how you doing?
King Mo, I think we'll...
King Mo, no, he's Sir Mo.
Sir Mo of version. But yes. Thank you very much for the
introduction. Do you think I get Sir Mo and Mabel on the show? I know Mabel is heat with you, Justin, so it might be... Maybe I could get him on with you and you guys could kind of patch things up.
I can't remember if I emailed him back and apologized at the time, but...
I'm sure you did. You're a nice boy.
I hate to have anybody have any problem with me ever, so...
I'll take up the feud with Mabel if Justin... I hate him. He's an asshole and he's fat.
Well, I really like him now because he's in Japan and he's squashing people with legitimate splashes from the top rope. So, I'd be happy to have him on and we could talk Japan and I could be like, Nelson, big man, I got someone on the line who wants to talk to you. He'll be like, yo, man, ooh,
Who's this you got on the lines, huh?
Oh, no. No,
that's not offensive.
And I'll be like, it's a blast from your past. It's just a hero. What? Oh, no. I don't want to talk to you. Nelson, just hear me out. Hear Justin out. He just wants to apologize. Okay, put him on. And then, what, you want Justin? Oh my god.
You know what? If
this is the worst moment in the show's history.
If Viscera was mad at me for saying he had slow work rate, then I don't know how he would feel about you doing an impression of him as a Sambo type caricature from the 19th century. So, by all means, Alan, maybe I'll try and apologize to him for you.
Maybe that's for the best. I can't believe this is going to be a free show.
Oh, no.
Great leadership by you to start your free show with an inside joke about a subscription message board and then an anecdote about something that happened with me 5 years ago. So, excellent.
Yeah, and we should note that he said he prepared this intro. Remember?
No, I prepared just the King Haku joke.
Well, that's frankly...
You were the one that said King Mo and fucking turned everything upside down and made me go crazy and make bad comments.
Well, you've certainly turned it around.
Yeah. Well, should we just start the show again?
I don't know. It's kind of a rookie... beginning, whereas in fact we are pros.
Yeah, and for anyone that's not...
Maybe we should just start it again.
No, we're not gonna. Maybe we should just put that as an extra on the show.
Okay.
Because I kind of don't want that to be people's first impression, you know?
No. The first impression being your impression of a large black man.
The worst impression.
Okay, we're starting again.
Okay.
Okay.
Could just be an Easter egg at the end.
That will be an Easter egg. Dear Lord. Okay.
And this is the first day of Lent.
Take a pause so I can identify the break here. And welcome everyone to your second show this week here from us at Dr. Keith Presents. Oh god. Another pause.
Again.
Two Easter eggs.
This is like a Velvet Sky match.
And welcome everyone to your second of two Dr. Keith Presents shows. Oh, these are going to be the best Easter eggs ever. Okay. For reals this time.
I'm ready, I promise.
Okay.